tomorrow's news today.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
We all tend to get caught up in the minutia of all the different political and cultural developments, and there's a lot of negativity, a lot of dark things happening in the world, but there's also a lot of really good, positive things happening. And I just wanted to reach out to all the listeners and viewers and tell you how much I appreciate you and how amazing you are of every race, color, and creed that love liberty and freedom and believe in our species and believe in God and believe in a better future. We've done so many incredible things as a species together, and we've got even greater things that we're going to do together. You know, we're told we're obsolete and that AI is better than us, when really it's just a reflection of things that we've created and things we've done. And we ourselves are just a reflection of God, made in God's image. We're not God, but we have the potentiality to really just envision and then build anything we can imagine. And we've proven that. So God doesn't make trash. God doesn't make junk. And humanity really, really is special. And I've been on air 32 years, and I think back how few people were awake to what was happening, and the predatory globalists, technocrat, eugenicist, death cult, and how many people are awake today, and the global awakening that's happening all over the planet. And I just am very, very heartened about the future of our species as more people wake up and more people get engaged. And a lot of people see fighting tyranny as work. We're designed to be engaged in society. We're designed to promote good and fight evil. And it is a fulfilling, animating contest of liberty that Thomas Jefferson talked about, and that's what we're all engaged in here. So to all my fellow freedom lovers, info warriors, people that value the truth and justice, I just wanted to salute you again and thank you, and just wanted you to realize you really are the resistance. But more than just the resistance to tyranny, you are the engine of good and human creativity and discovery. And that's what life is really all about. It's so magic. Just look at all the beauty around you. Just look at all of the incredible creations that God's made, and look at all the things that we've done together, and just realize the globalists want to demoralize you with ugly art and culture and architecture and literature. They admit that. They want to break your will. Don't ever let them do that. And when I say that, I'm not lecturing you, because sometimes I get down. You know, I get upset about what's happening. But I have to always just realize that it's all part of a process of free will. So for myself and the entire crew at alexjoneslive.com, as we continue on the next phase of the InfoWar, just very, very thankful for all of you, and just looking forward to the future together in the fight for free will and consciousness and controlling our own destiny. The universe lies before us as a gift that God gave us, and it's the gift of experiencing it all together. And it's the gift of experiencing the highs and the lows and everything in between. That's really what it's all about, the final equation. So for myself, the whole family at Alex Jones Live, I just want to thank you all again and just let you all remember that you are the resistance. But you're more than that. You're also the future. And in all of us lies the seeds of the universe and the future destiny of our species. God bless you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the 16th of June, 2026, and things are being exposed that have been hidden for a very long time. The veil is being rent, the curtain torn, and the seething evil behind the scenes is being exposed for the first time. We are going to be going over the Rape Gang Inquiry Report, as well as, of course, the Memorandum of Understanding between America and Iran. Huge show today. We'll be joined by Carl Benjamin and Frank Wright later in the show to talk about the impact that this Rape Gang Inquiry is going to have on the UK government and what we can do to achieve justice, if such a thing is even possible. I'm Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex Jones. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
I'll start with Sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex.
This is rocket fuel. This is incredible. This is rocket fuel. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is a cocktail I drink every day. A squirt of ultramethylene blue and T3. You are insane if you don't get it. Insane if you don't get it. Okay? Well, listen. Well, listen. You are insane if you don't get it. Insane if you don't get it. I am a wrecking ball. I am obsessed with this. I can't stop. Stop. And now I'm having this. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is the truth. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. You understand that? Does that burn into your brain?
I think I'm going to buy some methylene blue now.
Listening to an AJN Live Frontline report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Alex Jones Live. I'm Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex Jones. Very happy to be here with you. Happy to be back. Returned from a week vacation up in the mountains. What a week it's been. I sort of hesitate to say I'm happy to be back because the news we're going to cover today is nothing to be happy about, is one way to put it. The Rape Gang Inquiry Report out of the UK has been published thanks to the efforts of Rupert Lowe and the Restore Party. And it's, well, it's more disturbing than you can possibly imagine. We will be covering that extensively today. We have some incredible guests out of the UK, such as Carl Benjamin and Frank Wright, who are going to be joining us to break down what effect this is going to have, and if it's even possible to get justice for this level, this scale of criminality. But what I'm not going to do is spend the whole show simply reading the most egregious and horrifying portions of the Rape Gang inquiry. We are going to do that a little bit, obviously, to give it context and, you know, viewer discretion advised for this entire show because of the contents of this report, the contents of reality that we have to contend with. But it's not going to be simply the most horrifying examples one after another. I could do that. I could spend the entire show simply reading verbatim out of the inquiry report. And it's just, again, I don't have words. It is beyond description what's being described here. And in fact, it's why I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the details of the individual attacks. And we'll bring you the details. I'll tell you what they are. But we're not going to, you know, revel in it. Because it's just one aspect of what actually is going on, and we need to zoom out and look at this for what it is, which is an attack on our way of life, a genocidal attack against the people of the UK, and how it is part and parcel with the New World Order that was created after World War II. It's all one. It's all pieces of one giant attack. And we'll break that down. Like, I'm going to break down how this ties into the creation of the NHS and the Tavistock Institute, born out of the Tavistock Clinic, and how this reality that's exposed in the Rape Gang Inquiry Report is in no way an accident. One thing I keep seeing people say is, oh, the government has failed. Sure, if you want to put it one way, the government does accrue to itself monopoly power over physical force. And so they do have a responsibility and an obligation to protect their citizens, so they failed in that regard. But that's not the right way to frame it. They have succeeded wildly in their aims. Their aims are exactly what have happened, and it's impossible for it to be any other way. So much of, you know, what's being talked about in the Rape Gang inquiry online is framed as if it's, you know, again, a failure of the powers that be, and sort of just like, well, people just don't want to be called racist. And so you have gigantic, industrialized, essentially networks of criminals operating with total impunity. That is not explained by simply people not wanting to be called racist, especially not since it started back in the 1950s when people weren't quite so squeamish about being called racist. Actually, it didn't have the same power it does now. That's an insufficient explanation for what's going on here. It's a part of it. It's a large part of it, certainly, but it misses the forest for the trees. This is an attack. This is a plan. This is a top-down war being fought against the people of Britain, but also the rest of Europe. And it's absolutely no coincidence that at this very same time, you have a drive to institute digital ID in every European country. The UK banning social media, except for Blue Sky, of course. And if you've been following my work on the War Room here on the Alex Jones Network, or even on Moonbase Live that we do, we've been talking about Blue Sky since before most people even knew what it was, because it was always intended to be what it's becoming. The centralized, the only allowed platform, because it has built into it Chinese-style censorship rules and is absolutely dominated by leftists. It's not a coincidence that this is happening in every European nation all at once at exactly the same time, or that it has been happening for the last 70 years to every European nation at exactly the same time and in exactly the same way. So we're going to be breaking that down and getting into the history of it and how or what we could possibly do to achieve justice, again, if such a thing is even possible, when something is so evil and has gone on for so long. I'm not even sure if justice is even something we can try to achieve. We'll get into it. We'll try to figure that out, because, again, it's not about the individual disturbing aspects of each case. It's about taking them all together and understanding the true scale, scope, the again, I literally don't have words to describe what we're looking at here. It's more like a feeling. It's more like the feeling that you get standing on the edge of a cliff, right? You might not have words to describe the feeling in your gut when you are standing at the edge of a bottomless pit and feeling, you know, the pull towards the abyss. I don't have words for it, but again, it's not about the individual details, the horrors of each individual attack. It's about the systematic, the society-wide coordination that had to occur for this to happen and the psychological imperative behind it. We'll get into all of that. We'll also, of course, be talking about the Memorandum of Understanding between America and Iran. It's not a peace deal quite yet. It's another aspect of this Iran conflict. Sort of falls in one of these gray areas. It's not a war, but it's kind of a war. We have peace, but it's not really a peace. And we have ceasefire, but that doesn't mean that we cease firing or anything. It's all a little bit wonky when it comes to the war in Iran, and the Memorandum of Understanding is no different. We do have some details from it leaked out of Bloomberg, and I'll bring you those. The interesting thing about being gone for a week and not getting to cover all the stories and actually being up in the mountains and not really having sufficient internet to even keep up with things, when I would check in, it was interesting because so many of the stories that broke over this week were in fact things that we've covered sometimes for years. And so it's tomorrow's news today, right? The Alex Jones Network, the classic InfoWars saying tomorrow's news today, that it's so true. It's kind of ridiculous. And I have to, like, if you watch us every day and then you go online and you see, you know, these headlines about something being revealed, like, it must be strange, because it's strange for me to look at this and go, yeah, I talked endlessly about this a week ago or a month ago or 4 years ago or whatever it is. And now it's a big blaring headline and everybody's learning about it. We got to get more people to watch. We would be so ahead of the curve on all of this stuff. Things like in the rape gang inquiry report, the fact that care homes, orphanages in the UK were essentially being treated as brothels. That story was originally broke originally out of Rotherham all the way back in like 2014. We've been covering it ever since. It's nice to see everybody truly comprehend and understand and really come to terms with what we're actually dealing with here. None of this is new to us, though. We have known this forever. Even the Memorandum of Understanding and the end of the Iran war. It was a couple weeks ago, I was reading an article on air, on the War Room, about Goldman Sachs, talking about how basically mid-June was the longest that this conflict could go on without absolutely catastrophic and devastating domino effects that destroyed the world economy. So I don't know if we can find the cliff. I mean, we do so much stuff. It's like it all just gets lost in the mix. But probably a month ago, I sat here and went, oh, okay, so the war's going to be over mid-June. You can put your money on that, because that's what Goldman Sachs did. And what do you know? Midway through June, you get a Memorandum of Understanding. Because when it comes to the Iran war, there's sort of the unstoppable force versus the immovable object. The immovable object in this case is the catastrophic economic effects of shutting down the Strait of Hormuz for so long, and essentially the greatest economists in America decided that mid-June was the deadline, that things had to get back to normal by the end of June, or else they would suffer. So, you know, you can't let the banks. So we can't have Goldman Sachs suffering, after all. We cannot let BlackRock and Vanguard dip even in the slightest. So, of course, the war would be over by mid-June. So there's the economic reality that's undeniable and unavoidable. It has to end at this point, or else it's not just a pointless conflict in which we've gained nothing and spent enormous amounts of money and energy and lives to achieve nothing. It becomes like the destruction of the entire world, a feedback loop of depression that would render America totally destroyed. So that's sort of that would be the immovable object. The unstoppable force is the Greater Israel Project, and not just the desire of Israel, but the necessity for Israel to destroy Iran, to use the impetus that started on October 7th, 2023, to carry that through all the way to utter destruction of Iran, to leave it totally destroyed like another Syria or another Iraq. Another place, the only acceptable outcome of this, according to Israel, is an Iran that is incapable of responding to antagonization, whatever, to being attacked. That's the only possible positive and really existential result for them. Now, here it is. Goldman team, led by Dan Stroyven, said in a note published late Monday that it now expects exports to the Strait of Hormuz to normalize around pre-war levels around the end of July rather than August. Although, given the report acknowledges there's still risks to this assumption, in part owing to the trend of the last few months when President Trump made repeated claims on the cusp of a deal only for negotiations to stutter and the crisis to continue. This one's a little bit different. This one is different. There is the economic reality that this cannot go much longer. We have to basically accept where we are now and make the deal while we can. And people are saying the deal is worse than the deal that Obama originally made. That's a headline on Drudge Report. We'll get into whether it is or not. But the reality for Israel is that they have turned everybody against them here in America, especially the younger generations. It might not be this go around, but within 10 years, as frankly, the boomers die off and the, you know, reality, the truth about Israel continues to break through the mainstream media cordon, the mainstream media dam, you know, keeping back the truth. Social media circumvents that. They're doing everything they can to buy up social media, to silence that. I think that's a main part of the digital ID push as well. We'll get into all of that, but they are going to be destroyed if they don't become a superpower that is the sole superpower in the Middle East. That's the ultimate goal. That's what they've been pushing for ever since the attack by Hamas on Israel and the genocide in Gaza. They've destroyed their reputation. They've made that gamble on the bet that they would be able to take out Iran with Donald Trump using American forces, take out Iran, and then it would all be worth it. And then, okay, everybody hates Israel, but who cares? They're a monolithic superpower in the Middle East. And this is what Benjamin Netanyahu has said. This is what Israelis of all, you know, stripes in positions of power have said is their goal. And again, it's not just a goal. It's like they've gone all in. They've bet the house on this. If they don't get it, if they don't destroy Iran, if we go back to a situation in which Iran is able to build up and is actually, you know, get some of the sanctions removed and its economy gets to really, you know, expand even more. And I mean, it's unacceptable. So I don't think Israel is going to accept this. The reaction from the Israeli firsters out there is absolute outrage. And, you know, they're apoplectic. It's actually kind of hilarious. They're the panickins now. They're the panickins. They're no longer MAGA. They all hate Trump all of a sudden, which is typical and, you know, obvious that this was always going to happen, that they were going to basically criticize you for daring to suggest that Trump was making a mistake here and basically say that you have to submit to Trump's will and their will unquestioningly, or else you're a panickin. You're a leftist. You might as well be AOC if you disagree with their approach on Israel. And now suddenly they're the ones criticizing Trump and saying what a bad thing this deal is and how he's betrayed them. And they basically turned on him completely, which was always the predictable outcome. And I don't understand how Trump didn't know that, or maybe he did and is doing it anyway. We'll go through it. But essentially, Israel cannot let this stand. They cannot have peace with Iran. and they're not going to. So no matter what, if this memorandum of understanding becomes a honest to God peace deal, it's going to be, no matter what, a pause. It's just a pause at the end of the day, because the tactical reality of Israel is that up to this point, they have spent all of their reputation overseas. They've spent all of their goodwill. They've ruined their reputation worldwide. And what have they gotten in return? A little sliver of Gaza, a little chunk of Syria, taken over for the time, you know, a couple villages in Lebanon. Is that worth it? Do you think that's worth it? It will only be worth it if Israel is entirely in their hands, including Gaza and the West Bank, if they get the Golan Heights, and if they get the entire, you know, bottom half of Lebanon, and Iran is rendered completely impotent and incapable of responding to Israeli aggression. Like Syria, you know, Israel would routinely bomb Syria, and Syria had no ability to hit them back. That's the ideal condition that Israel wants to see every other country in the region rendered down to, and they're not going to stop till that's the case. So that hasn't changed. That into the economic reality of the Strait of Hormuz destroying the world economy, which, as I always said when it came to the war in Iran, was kind of the point. I don't even think it was necessarily an unfortunate side effect. I think it may have been a primary driver. So really, the only question at this point is, why did we do this? What was the point of the Iran war? And when should we have stopped? When should Israel have stopped pursuing this course of action? Because you could go back to, like, maybe a reasonable thing would be like maybe 4 days after the war started. Maybe 4 days after the war started, it was supposed to be a 4-day adventure. The idea was that there would be a decapitation strike and Iran would fall apart and whoever was left would be desperate to make a deal with America. And it would be a 4-day in and out Venezuela, you know, Maduro capture style operation. When it was obvious that that wasn't the case, that that failed, that the Iranians had actually prepared for that and had made contingency plans that made such a plan inviable, maybe that would have been a good time to stop. Maybe if we'd stopped 4 days in, we'd be in a hell of a lot better position than we're in right now. We certainly wouldn't have lost $100 billion worth of equipment in the intervening 90 plus days. You could go a little bit further, you know, maybe if we hadn't, or if Israel hadn't murdered the negotiators in the early weeks of the Iran conflict, we could have had a better agreement, but unfortunately they did. So we didn't. They did murder them. We didn't get the deal. So here we are. I would say you could go even further back. I would say the time to have slammed the brakes on probably would have been around like October 9th, 2023. It should have been in the days after October 7th that the Israeli population, the American population, the world media should have pumped the brakes a little bit and said, well, hold on. What actually happened here? And is this actually an existential threat that demands our immediate lashing out militarily against everybody and committing horrible war crimes against innocent people? Like, maybe we should have pumped the brakes then and said, well, what's actually going on here? Who's actually responsible for this? And how do we actually prevent it from ever happening in the future? Because maybe if that had happened, maybe if there had been a little bit of patience, been a little bit of thoughtfulness involved, maybe people would have understood, okay, yes, the attack on October 7th was bad, but it was also allowed to happen by Netanyahu. It was also impossible to have occurred without the complicity of the IDF in the region, allowing the invasion to happen, the stand down order, followed by the Hannibal directive, in which most of the death occurred with helicopter gunships, you know, killing everybody at the Nova Fest, death tolls that were then attributed to Hamas and used to justify the invasion of Gaza, which still hasn't gone as planned. Hezbollah is still racking up wins against Israel. Hamas is still not even disarmed, let alone destroyed completely. Maybe all the way back then, if you could go back in time and choose a different life path, wouldn't it have been better? Wouldn't it have been the more desirable outcome to not sacrifice God only knows how many hundreds of thousands of people murdered in the last 2.5 years of conflict and the reputation overseas that has been destroyed and that will eventually inevitably lead to your destruction, because Israel exists entirely because of the protection of America. And once that goes away, once the people in America, a majority amount, no longer want to support Israel, Israel cannot exist on its own. Maybe it would have been better all the way back then to choose a different path. That different path is always available, and it looks like Trump is trying to take it, whether Israelis and pro-Israel Americans allow him to do that. I guess we'll wait and see. Mark Levin, not happy. Mark Levin is a complete panickin at this point. He's turned against Trump. He is the woke Reich. He basically is a leftist. He's AOC. And it's very sad to see. So it's not exactly, it's like, yeah, we took a week off, but it's like everything has unfolded exactly as we foresaw, because it's all kind of inevitable and obvious that Iran had made contingency plans to deal with the style of attacks that Benjamin Netanyahu convinced Trump to undertake, that they had the ability to close the Strait of Hormuz. It's like, I feel ridiculous for even saying it. It's like, of course they could close the Strait of Hormuz. Whoever thought they couldn't? So we'll get into what exactly the memorandum of understanding is. But I do want to say, I'll tell you one story from this week. I was out of town because my grandmother lives in a little town in Colorado. And my mom was on vacation with us, and she was walking around the block, said hello to my grandmother's neighbors, who are big fans of Alex Jones, big fans of the InfoWar. And, you know, they go up to my mom. Mom says, oh, you know, Harrison's coming in town. You know, you should come by and say hi. And the guy said, yeah, I just feel so bad that Alex is off the air now, that InfoWars is off the air. My mom had to tell him, like, he's not off the air. AlexJonesLive.com. It's AlexJonesLive.com. I know you've heard Alex say this a lot, but it was just another another instance of this. You got to tell your friends. You got to tell your neighbors. AlexJonesLive.com. AlexJonesLive.com. We are still on the air. You got to go to Rumble. Rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShow. Or The Alex Jones Show Live. You've got to tell people that we're still on air, because people genuinely don't know. Some of our biggest fans don't even know. And I was talking to my dad about it, and he's like, well, are you doing like a big push on X? And the thing is, if you have X, you probably know where to find us. You're probably tuned in. Not everybody has X. A lot of our fans, you know, going to InfoWars.com may have been, you know, the only sort of connection they had to sort of this online political world. And that's been severed now that we've been forced to close down InfoWars. So we're trying to reestablish that connection, you know, relay these communication lines to our soldiers out there. Let them know. AlexJonesLive.com. AlexJonesLive.com. There are people out there. They don't know. Folks, you got to tell your boomer friends, your boomer neighbors. No offense, boomers. We love you. But what the heck? We're not off the air. We are still on the air. We are still in the fight. We are still just as powerful as we ever were. But we need you to spread the word. Tell your friends. Share the links. Please, we don't just say this for no reason. There are people out there that think that we're off the air. Please don't let them live in ignorance. TheAlexJonesStore.com is how you support us. We'll be right back on the other side. We'll get into this memorandum of understanding. We'll be joined by some great guests later to talk about the rape.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are listener and viewer supported. It's very simple. TheAlexJonesStore.com. You back us. You fund us. You are everything. And we bring you the very best products, the very best supplements, the very best water filtration systems, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, the very best knives, silver coins, you name it, so that you get a great product and empower yourself while at the same time empowering yourself and free humanity against the globalists. So, a lot of new things at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Look at these belts. They are super comfortable. They are incredible high quality. They are so durable. They'll last a lifetime. And the way they're designed is something special. So I paid like $75 a year or so ago for a similar belt. And I told Bigley, I like this type of belt. Why don't you get these? They got belts even better than the one I bought about a year ago that I love. And they're selling them for $39 right now. That is a big discount out of the gate at theellisshowstore.com. Premium nylon tactical belt. This is the premium nylon tactical belt available now at theellisshowstore.com for only $39.99. It's built from heavy-duty nylon webbing with a smooth automatic ratchet buckle. No holes, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. You get a perfect micro-adjustable fit whether you're working, carrying, driving, sitting at your desk, or on the move. And we've got them in three editions. On the buckle is a little cross, a 1776 edition, and Alex Jones signature edition, making it original and special. It's all black, tactical, clean, durable, and built for everyday use. It's murdered out. It's off black. And right now it's only $39 at thealexjonesstore.com. They are premium. They look great. They have knocked it out of the park with this product. Get yours today, and also buy gifts for friends and family, and know you're funding the tip of the spear in the fight against tyranny. Also, Bigley knocked it out. Highest rating, level with the carbon filters, beautiful, highest grade stainless steel for lower price than other systems that aren't even as good. We're so proud of this. The first group sold out. More coming in about a week and a half. So get your order in now to make sure it's ahead of the line. Those are now available. This is platinum level, gravity-fed water filtration, and it makes this operation possible, multi-tested by top companies to take out hundreds and hundreds of bad chemicals at non-detectable levels, the atrazine, the glyphosate, all of it. You should do this for your family. Do this for yourself. It's a big 3-gallon system. It's amazing. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And then we have the widest selection of Patriot apparel. Some of the designs are the best. Some of them are okay. I'll just be honest. Some of the designs I come up with are okay. But I came up with the concepts of these new shirts. Limited edition, 250th anniversary of America, July 4th, special edition. So it's sold through the middle of June, through July, and then we're not going to sell these t-shirts anymore. They look so good, they'll probably come up with another variant or something. But these are limited edition, Liberty or Death, 1776. 2026. They came up with that. I love it. The simple one I came up with, America, 250 years strong, nice, simple, clean, kind of got like a polo look to it. Look at that one. Destroying Tyranny since 1776, Gadsden flag on the Betsy Ross flag. I came up with that design. I'm really proud of these. They're very clean. You'll meet a lot of like-minded people wearing these. Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. I designed that bad boy. They designed the 1776, 250 years of freedom. Oh, I love the one they designed with the brass knuckles, 7076 Free, Defund the Deep State. That's all their designs. America, Ride Fast, Live Free. They designed that. Ball caps as well, all limited edition. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And to keep us on the air, take action now. Big Brother hates it when you fund the tip of the spear. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. We'll be joined by Frank Wright in the next hour. Carl Benjamin of the Locust Eaters, also known as Sargon of Akkad, joins us in the 2 o'clock hour to talk about the Rape Gang Inquiry Report that was published days ago and that lays out the true scale of horrors committed on the people of the UK by the by their own government, actually, using, of course, immigrants as the weapons of choice. But certainly the immigrants didn't get there on their own and didn't establish their own cover-up networks on their own in opposition to the British government. It was actually all part and parcel of the New World Order that was being created in the post-war Bretton Woods diversity drive that is still ruining lives to this day. We're going to get very much into that, but we're going to continue to talk about the Memorandum of Understanding between Iran and America that Donald Trump plans to sign on a mountaintop in Switzerland, apparently. Of course, this is not a full-fledged peace deal, and the headlines at AlexJonesLive.com. Trump says he will drop bombs if he doesn't like the final Iran peace deal. If they don't behave, we'll go right back to dropping bombs right smack in the middle of their heads, said President of the United States. And of course, we've seen this one before. We've seen this over and over again. 2 weeks ago, it was actually June 1st, I reposted it on my X because it's just ridiculous. For like weeks, every single week, it was the same thing. On Friday, we'd be inches away from a deal. We're so close. We're almost there. Then Israel would bomb Lebanon. Iran would respond. The whole thing would fall apart. And we'd be back to square one. It's happened over and over and over again. This one feels a little bit different. There is the economic reality. That means that there is a very serious deadline that we're up against right now. There has to be a pause of some sort just to open up the strait and get the oil flowing and get the economy back on track. That's just a reality that is going to dictate the path that this takes, at least for the immediate future. But this is not over by a long shot, and it could very easily be derailed in a number of different ways. And that's sort of an interesting aspect of all of this that, again, we've been reporting on the entire time and the entire second Trump administration. We've been highlighting and illustrating and investigating this shadow war going on within the Trump administration, as well as without and sort of all over the place. But this, the constant meddling by Israel, the constant subversion by Israel, as half of Trump's administration seemed to not want to go to war with Iran and half of them did. And you had the Signalgate controversy and Mike Waltz coordinating with Netanyahu to undermine the negotiations with Trump in 2025. There has been an ongoing secondary conflict. We have our main conflict with Iran. The secondary conflict is the one with Israel that's keeping us in the war with Iran, that started the war with Iran in the first place. And that is, of course, using America to achieve the ends of Israel for no benefit to ourselves. And this continues. Israel requested a copy of the Memorandum of Understanding. They wanted to be involved in the negotiations and they were denied. Why were they denied even seeing the information? Because they would have leaked it, because it would have given them ammunition, would have given them the ability to find things they didn't like about it, blow it out of proportion, go to the media with it, and scuttle the whole thing from the outset. And the really dangerous thing that's happening right now is that Senator Tom Cotton and others are adding amendments and provisions to the latest big budget package, the NDAA, or basically any bill in the American Congress that has to be passed through, and they're tacking on these provisions to merge Israel with America militarily and at the intelligence level, meaning that if those provisions had passed previously, if those had already been in place and those bills had already gone through the process and been signed, then we would have had no ability to stop Israel from seeing the Memorandum of Understanding. We would have actually been compelled to give it to them because a provision of these bills being written by the likes of Tom Cotton are that we have to share everything we have with Israel. So, if they'd gone back in time, they'd already established this, then we likely wouldn't be anywhere close to a Memorandum of Understanding right now. We would have been compelled to share intelligence with Israel that they would have used to destroy the negotiations in the same way that they murdered the negotiators the last couple of times that we've been close to getting a deal. Like, it's so strange that we have to try to negotiate peace in absolute secrecy, because if our greatest ally finds out who we're negotiating with or what we're negotiating, they will intervene and kill the negotiators or disrupt the negotiations. Why are we saddled with this? Why are we having to not just try to get out of a unconscionable and pointless and hugely damaging war that we chose to go into with Iran, while simultaneously trying to defend ourselves against the constant infiltration by our quote-unquote greatest ally that got us into it in the first place? It's infuriating. I really can't go on much longer. And there is a great conflict brewing, because Israel is not interested in containing themselves to the provisions, the strictures of the Memorandum of Understanding as it's laid out now. It demands that Israel remove itself from Lebanon. They have no intention of doing that. This is coming to a head, and this will really be a test of Israeli influence here in America, a test of Donald Trump's priorities in this case. I would hate to see this whole thing fire up again, and I don't think that's possible right now. Maybe in the next couple of months, it'll reignite, or Maybe there will be a giant false flag attack that will get us right back into it. Don't underestimate the Israelis and their desperation and their feeling that this is an existential issue. That's why they're freaking out. That's why you have Telegram groups and, you know, X groups of Israelis who are cursing Donald Trump and saying this is a total betrayal and this is, you know, the worst thing anybody's ever done. The reason it has gone to that level immediately, it always seems to. It always seems that every crisis is an existential one to which there's no time to stop and think. We have to act immediately. Don't consider anything. We have to bomb Gaza to smithereens. Don't look into who's actually responsible for October 7th. There's no time. It's an emergency. This constant, you know, high stress environment allows you, you know, some freedom of action when you're the ones causing the stress in the population, invoking the fear response, overriding the logic faculties of your people and forcing them into positions that they would otherwise avoid. They have to do it. They see this as existential because to them, it kind of is. It actually is. So what's gone so wrong? How have we gone so off the rails? And what was the point of this? And when it all goes sideways, who do you think they're going to blame? Who do you think they're already blaming to a large degree? We're the ones who said we shouldn't go to war with Iran. We're the ones who said this whole thing was a bad idea, that this was ridiculous, that it's a betrayal of Donald Trump's campaign promises over and over and over and over again. And this proves we're exactly right. This proves you should have been listening to us the entire time. This means that people like me, who were routinely and still are accused of anti-Semitism for my stances of Israel, we should have been listened to the entire time for the sake of Israel, because they're in a worse position than they were on October 8th, 2023. And if they had not engaged in a genocide, if they had not forced America into war with Iran, they would be in a better position now. But anybody saying that was accused of anti-Semitism, of being a Muslim agent, a Qatari agent, and not just ignored, but shouted down and demonized. Well, maybe you'll listen now, but probably not. So we'll just comment on it and keep being right. What else are we supposed to do? President Trump told reporters on the sideline of the G7 summit in France that the pending U.S.-Iran memorandum of understanding is, quote, not final, and warned that, quote, if he doesn't like it, we'll go back to shooting at them. If I don't like it, the MOU, we'll go back to shooting at them, dropping bombs on their head, Trump said. Trump repeated, if they don't behave, we'll go right back to dropping bombs right smack in the middle of their head. Great. But that hasn't worked, has it? But that actually hasn't achieved anything, has it? Actually, it was never going to achieve anything because there was always the necessity of boots on the ground, and that was always obvious. And Trump has, to his credit, avoided that ultimate, you know, dedication. He has not actually sent in large amounts of troops that would be necessary to do anything that Israel wants us to do, to go in and seize the nuclear material or like actually occupy the country or anything of the sort. It would require American boots on the ground, not just boots on the ground, American boots on the ground, because Israeli boots on the ground, well, you can ask Hezbollah how effective those are and how numerous they are. Not very. So it requires American boots on the ground. Trump has avoided that, but that was always the point. But without doing that, then none of this matters, because you can't bomb a country like Iran into submission. That has never worked, ever. Ever. And again, we can go all the way back to, I mean, this year has been crazy. You understand, it was like January 1st of this year that we did the raid on Maduro. We captured him out of Venezuela. And you understand that that had to do with denying supplies, first of all, to Hezbollah, who was tied in with Venezuela, as well as to stop an alternative source of energy so that the shutting down of the strait would be as painful as possible. Iran says the deal to end the war with the U.S. requires Israel to withdraw from Lebanon. I don't think they're going to do that. I mean, things are about to get weird. Things are about to get weird because Israel's not going to stop bombing Lebanon. The question is, if Iran responds to that, which, according to the memorandum of understanding, they're kind of legally obligated to do, or at least allowed to do, right? If Israel keeps demolishing civilian buildings in Beirut, Iran is going to respond to that and probably bomb Tel Aviv. Then the question becomes, what does America do? Does America then say, well, you know, Iran bombed Tel Aviv, they've broken the ceasefire, we're right back at it? Because then the strait remains closed, the economic situation teeters ever closer to the brink. I don't know. I just don't know. Somebody on X commented, well, you know, Israel is bombing Lebanon. I said, well, that's kind of an assumed reality. They're going to keep bombing Lebanon. They are not interested in being constrained by America. They are not concerned about what's best for America or America's interest. They are obsessed with killing everybody in Lebanon. So that's what they're going to keep doing. The real question comes is if Iran responds, whether we perceive that as a breaking of the peace deal, which we shouldn't, according to the strictures and the stipulations of the MOU. But we've seen Trump do this exact thing over and over and over again. Now, however, we are so much closer to that economic abyss. It's an interesting set of incentives pushing and pulling from every side. U.S. President Donald Trump has opted to end the wars in Iran and Lebanon long before Israel's goals were accomplished. This story is from AOL.com. Netanyahu, Israel's arch survivor, set to face voter fury over Iran deal. They say he's chosen to end the wars in Iran and Lebanon long before Israel's goals were accomplished. And Netanyahu's boast in March that, quote, we are changing the face of the Middle East looks increasingly empty, like they've increasingly failed, already facing corruption allegations, domestic political controversies and criticisms over security failings in the October 7th, 2023 Hamas attack on Israel. We will now face voters' judgment. He will now face voters' judgment in the handling of wars and Israel's relationship with the United States, its most important ally. And this was entirely Netanyahu. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. He was the prime minister during October 7th. He allowed October 7th to happen, despite having tons of intelligence that it was going on, despite the rapid response of the IDF and the Israeli military being able to easily handle such an incursion, except they were ordered to stand down for 6 hours. And then the Hannibal Directive was invoked. And then the genocide in Gaza occurred. And then year over year, Netanyahu in particular pressured Donald Trump to first do the 12-day war and then to try to do a Venezuela-style coup on Iran in January of this year, and then actually came about in February, late February. It totally failed, and yet they had no contingency plan. They had no plan B. It's like, we'll bomb them, we'll decapitate the regime. We have this historic opportunity. And he tricked Trump into going along with this on faulty intelligence. And now they're doing everything they can to keep him in it. It's not that complicated. It is that despicable and infuriating. From The Telegraph, the 14-point Iran deal in full and how it favors Tehran. A leaked document details Iran's hard-won gains in negotiations with Washington. High on a mountaintop in Switzerland on Friday, U.S. and Iranian officials will sign off on a deal to end a costly war. The 14-point plan may fall short of a full-blown peace accord, but Donald Trump and his team believe it will usher in a period of stability in the Middle East and create a new positive dynamic in the relationship between Washington and Iran. Neither side has officially shared the contents of the Memorandum of Understanding, MOU, which is due to be released after the signing ceremony. However, a credible version has been leaked and was first published by Bloomberg. The document paves the way for a ceasefire and the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, but it offers Iran much, much more than that. The Telegraph can break down the finer points in each article of the arrangement. Number one, the Islamic Republic of Iran and the United States, together with their allies in the current war, declare upon the signing of the Memorandum of Understanding an immediate and permanent end to the war on all fronts, including Lebanon, and undertake that from now on they will not launch any hostile actions against each other and will refrain from the threat or use of force against each other. The final agreement will confirm the provisions of this article and the remaining articles. The first element of the deal is a ceasefire between not only Iran and the U.S., but Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon. This was a major precondition for Iran. However, this has proved to be a stumbling block in recent weeks for talks because of an apparent refusal by Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister, to halt attacks on the Iranian-backed militia, by which, of course, they mean the civilians of Lebanon. And again, you know, Trump, I don't know, do we have the video of Trump talking about, he's like, you know, you don't have to bomb a whole apartment building just to get one Hezbollah guy. And it's like, does Trump think that they're actually trying to kill Hezbollah guys? They're not. And they admit that they're not. I mean, the stated policy of Israel is that for every drone that Hezbollah sends, they're just going to, like, kill 10 civilians. It's a strategy of terror. they don't know how to deal with the threat of Hezbollah drones. And so the only thing that they can think to do is to just basically punish civilians to try to pressure civilians to be mad at Hezbollah for continuing to send drones, because every time they send drones, Israel demolishes a building with people inside. So let's go to this video. This is Donald Trump speaking at the G7 summit. I believe this video is from yesterday. Do we have the audio of that, guys?
He's done an amazing job of pulling it together. He's not a Boy Scout, but he's done an amazing job of pulling it together. And he is very good with Hezbollah, does not like them. And I'll tell you what, Israel's fighting Hezbollah too long, and too many people are being killed. And you don't have to knock down an apartment house every time you're looking for somebody, because there are a lot of people in those apartment houses, and they're not all Hezbollah, that I can tell you. And I suggested to Israel to let Syria take care of Hezbollah, because to be honest with you, I think they'd do a better job of doing it.
Is that job on board with you?
And I didn't like Syria. I didn't like where 2 hours before we're signing the agreement that there was an attack in Lebanon, in Beirut. It was right in, it wasn't like in the southern side, and you know, it was in Beirut. I did not like that. I let them know that. I didn't like it, not at all. But I think that Syria, you know, he's pulled that country together amazingly quickly.
So again, I mean, and we told you this was always the plan. This has been the plan forever. This occurred in 2006 already. They failed to, you know, get rid of Hezbollah with Israeli incursions under George W. Bush and Condoleezza Rice. They sort of gave the green light to Israel to try. They were unimpressed with Israel's ability to make these incursions into Lebanon. And so they started ISIS. And so they created ISIS to try to destroy Hezbollah. And Hezbollah was one of the main factions that stopped the rise of ISIS. Of course, since then, they've overthrown Bashar al-Assad, installed an ISIS commander into Syria, and now want to use the Syrian army's forces, because the Israeli army is incapable of, you know, sizable ground incursions of any sort, because they're too precious. The Israelis are just too precious. So they need to send in the hordes, the mobs of the Islamic goblins to, you know, take over Hezbollah in the meantime. This was always the plan. It is an extremely would be an extremely dangerous development for the people of Lebanon to have this pincer attack of Israel in the south and Syrian forces coming in from the north. But regardless, Hezbollah has been holding their own and actually achieving pretty sizable strategic successes against Israel, including ones that are like truly mind-blowing. I mean, according to reports, Hezbollah took down an Israeli drone at 7,000 meters in the air. That's like 4 miles in the air. Hezbollah is a civilian militia. They're not a state. How does a civilian militia take down a drone that's 4 miles in the air? With extremely sophisticated technology that Israel is having trouble contending with. That's a giant aspect of this. The thing is, the illusion can exist for so long until it runs into reality. That's going to be actually kind of a theme that goes into the Rape Gang Inquiry Report, because they can say whatever they want about Iran. They can make all the claims they want. When push comes to shove, Iran has and had the capability to defend themselves, and it all kind of falls apart when the missiles start flying. The whole illusion starts to crumble when the bombs start falling, and all of the manipulation that can occur in the information realm sort of means nothing when the fist is hitting the face. Like, it's just there's a come to Jesus moment happening, I think, with the powers that be. Trump and Netanyahu on Israel. We are the big partner and he is the small partner. Trump said that about Israel. We're not acting like it. We haven't been acting like it. Again, I genuinely think we are coming to some sort of major conclusion of this. Either it happens again. Israel again is unrestrained and able to bomb Lebanon with impunity. And then any response from Iran will be treated as a violation of the terms of the MOU and the war will start up again. Or America has to actually restrain Iran, just like Joe Kent said when he resigned in protest of the war in Iran, saying the only way to get any sort of peace, the only way any memorandum of understanding or ceasefire or peace deal ever has any hope of existing in the Middle East is if America uses our power to restrain Israel, put severe restraints on Israel. I would want us to even sanction or in some other way occupy Israel, because they clearly cannot be trusted, certainly not when they feel as though they have a blank check by America, a shield of America to do whatever they want to whoever they want, whenever they want. The Islamic Republic of Iran and the United States undertake to negotiate and reach a final agreement within a maximum period of 60 days, extendable by mutual consent. Immediately upon the signing of this memorandum of understanding, the United States lift the naval blockade and prevent any interference or obstruction against the Islamic Republic of Iran and restore traffic within a maximum of 30 days to its full capacity. So no matter how you try to spin this, it's a loss for America. We are in a worse position at the end of this, as a consequence of this MOU, than we were before the war. This has failed. It has failed utterly and completely and ridiculously. They are going to control the Strait. They are going to make a lot of money off the Strait. They are going to be given hundreds of billions of dollars of investment as a consequence of having to rebuild because of the destruction that we wrought, and we have achieved absolutely nothing but embarrassing ourselves, getting thousands and thousands of people killed, including a bunch of kids at a girls' school in the early hours, and, you know, ruining our ability to negotiate anything ever because we keep killing the negotiators and then violating agreements, totally destroying our own reputation overseas. This has been nothing but bad. I'm not saying that we were right the entire time to, you know, boost ourselves, but because we're going to be right in the future, and for the love of God, why won't people listen to us? Why is it so hard to find people that can recognize obvious reality? Why were we, the Alex Jones Network, the only ones, it seemed, who were able to recognize that obviously all of this would inevitably happen no matter what? The Strait of Hormuz closing down, Iran responding in kind and not being taken down because of a decapitation strike. This was obvious from the beginning. Anybody telling you otherwise is lying. And that's, to me, one of the important parts of having the Alex Jones Network, Alex Jones Live, in operation, because they can say, hey, we all thought this was going to go great. Nobody knew what Iran was capable of doing. Nobody knew what the negative outcome would be. It's kind of hard to make that case when we're on air and making the opposite case over and over and over again and being right about all of it. We get back on the other side. We'll be joined by Frank Wright. Support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. That's thealexjonesstore.com. Make yourself a purchase and keep us on air and trying desperately to right this ship.
Hi, folks. Doc Bigley here. And today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are.
But don't despair. We've found a solution. Follow me.
I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs.
Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.